Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
WSBT. This is your Tuesday, April the 10th of 2018. Along with Eric Hansen, he is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Sports Director Darren Pritchett, and we are in a very warm press box at Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend. The players warming up on the field, sweatshirts, jackets. Some of them have those ski masks on, trying to stay warm on another brisk day in downtown South Bend. From what we understand, though, it's going to start warming up over the next couple of days. One thing about Mother Nature, she's undefeated. No one can beat her. She's in charge, Eric. She's the one person that's undefeated in this world.
Well, if I'm looking at the future forecast, she's getting nicer to us as the week goes on, although there's some precipitation. But in terms of temperatures, it's a big contrast. But then I see next Monday it's supposed to be high of 38. So it's back to
reality. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Come on now. That's not fair.
After 60s and 70s on the weekend.
Well, I would describe my opinion of Mother Nature right now, but I'll let maybe Troy Lovello, the Diamondbacks manager, take care of that. He has more of a strong vocabulary, apparently, than I do.
Yowza.
Yeah, he had a few words of way of describing Cardinals catcher Yadier Molina, the way he was catching baseballs that were apparently balls that were called strikes, and he called him a couple of names, which led to a little bench clear. No punches were thrown, but both were suspended one game today. Lovello was fine. Yadi was not, and Yadi's going to appeal. But he needs an off day tomorrow anyway, so he'll probably, if he gets the appeal denied, he would have had the day off anyway. But, yeah, Mr. Lovello had some very, very choice words, very creative words to talk about the all-star catcher of St. Louis. Well, the Cubs and the White Sox are both playing this afternoon. On the north side of Chicago, the home opener is not going so well for the Chicago Cubs. The Pittsburgh Pirates, oh, those pesky Pirates, they're 7-2. Who would have thought that after all the changes they made? Gerrit Cole's an Astro. Andrew McCutcheon's now a Buck or a Giant. Pirates are leading the Cubbies 8-3 in the bottom of the eighth inning. Tyler Chatwood, the starter, a lot of pitches over the heart of the plate. He got dinged up. Javier Baez actually has 2 home runs today, a couple of solo shots. But wait, the Cubs have the bases loaded, bottom of the eighth inning, 2 outs, and Jason Hayward's at the plate. And I said Chris Bryant, it might have been a little more interesting. But Mr. Hayward's at the plate with his 200 batting average, and we'll see how that ends up. And the good guys are playing on the south side of Chicago today against the Tampa Bay Rays. Chicago in search of their first home victory of the year. Not going so well right now. It's Tampa Bay 5, Southsiders 1 in the bottom of the eighth inning. We'll keep you updated on the progress of that game. And the South Bend Cubs will host the Bowling Green Hot Rods in game 2 of a 4-game series tonight. 7:05 first pitch, pregame at 6:45 on 96.1. WSBT. We're going to talk about the Irish safety position coming up in this particular segment. Then we will get to some Irish basketball news and go right back into a little more football conversation as we sneak in the Rover competition into our conversation today. We'll give you an update on the Cubs and the White Sox. My 5 question of the day: the 5 Notre Dame players that will make the biggest impact on special teams this fall. And probably one of the guys in the top 5 is not practicing with the team right now. He's at a kicking camp. That's Justin Yoon.
Well, you know what? I think I am going to take out Yoon and Newsom so that we just have coverage and return guys. How's that? I think that'll be more interesting because we figure Yoon and Newsom are going to be 1 and 2. So let's dismiss them and give them the honorary one and two, and we'll do the other five.
So the people considered not football players, you're not putting on the list.
Well, I'll tell you what, Justin Yoon had as many tackles last year as I think Pagano did for Oregon, the kid that was going to transfer from Clemson to Notre Dame and ended up at Oregon. I think they had the same amount of tackles last year.
And he did absolutely nothing. Isn't that amazing?
He was hurt some, but even when he was healthy, he really didn't thrive in that Oregon defense. You know, it just goes to show you sometimes when you kind of think, okay, that would be the move of the year to get him on the Notre Dame roster and would really shore up their interior line and defensive line, and then all of a sudden Jerry Tillery has a breakout year, and Jerry Tillery was a much better player than Scott Pagano was last year.
Without a doubt. All right, we have also next hour on the program a little more baseball conversation, the basketball news of the day. Mike Bray gets a contract extension through 2025, and also the ACC opponents were announced. I would say the Irish got the B schedule this year. So, rapid fire also coming up next hour. Looks like Hayward must have got a hit. It's now 8-5 Pirates in the bottom of the eighth inning, and Baez, who has homered twice, is at the plate for Joe Maddon's Chicago Cubs. But let's get rolling here as we focus in on Fighting Irish football spring practice. They had a practice today, if I'm not mistaken. No media session. Yep. After practice today, so we will talk a little about the Irish safety position, and it is a position of quite interest for Notre Dame fans, because you could probably say safely that it was one of the more least productive safety groups in recent Notre Dame history. And we're not going just by the fact they did not come up with an interception. There were breakdowns from time to time. So that is a big part of this defense trying to get better in 2018. And imagine if the safety position becomes a difference maker. Look how much better this defense is going to be put together by Clark Lee. So first off, here's Brian Kelly, the head coach of the Fighting Irish football team, on the state of the safety competition.
There is no starting safeties at Notre Dame in 2018 on whatever date it is, April 7th. April 7th. So Nick Coleman has the opportunity to be the starting safety. However, we moved him over to nickel because we think, obviously, there's a lot of guys and a lot of, you know, rotation. This could give Nick even more opportunities to be on the field because we like his ability to play close man-to-man coverage at that nickel position.
Eric, do you feel like that there are several guys right now going for a starting spot? I didn't feel like that was going to be the case when spring got underway.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people in the mix. And one of the reasons why you probably didn't feel that at the beginning of spring was Houston Griffith was a cornerback, and now he is a safety. And so he's moved over into that mix. But let's kind of look at it from last year. This was a group where they played the safeties very conservatively. It was Nick Coleman and Jalen Elliott. They were both first-time starters at safety. Nick Coleman had been a cornerback earlier in his career, moved to safety, has some really good speed but doesn't have some of the safety traits that you look for. And then Jalen Elliott was a high school quarterback that was all-state Virginia as a quarterback, played some defense, but was still kind of slow to pick up the nuances of the safety position. Really good athlete, though. And so that's kind of what you lived with last year and as your starters. And I think now you've got some infusion of talent at that position. You have Alohi Gilman. The transfer from Navy is now eligible to play, so he's in the mix. You have Houston Griffith, the true freshman, moving from corner to safety. He's in the mix. Mm-hmm. Jordan Jenmar Keith, who has not played a lot of football, period, you know, grew up in Sweden, moved to San Diego as a high school kid, learned how to play football watching YouTube videos back in Sweden. He's coming on very strong. Derek Allen will be here in June. So there are a lot, you know, and certainly the two guys that started last year are still in the mix. I don't think, you know, guys like Devin Studstill and Nico Fertitta are in the mix, but they're certainly part of the depth. But there's a lot of options there. And, you know, just watching practice, whatever they end up with is going to be better than what they have. Even if it were Coleman and Elliott, they're better football players than they were last year. They're better safeties. But my sense is that neither one of those two will start, that they will be part of the rotation.
All right, so let's talk about one of the new guys on the scene, an early enrollee, Houston Griffith. He started fall camp working out at the cornerback position. I remember when Tyler James, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune, joined us on Thursdays to talk about various players. One thing about Houston he talked about, he's got a lot of versatility. He could play a couple of different spots in the secondary. So we saw Houston start the spring at cornerback, and I think he had pretty good success, it's fair to say. It was very impressive.
Yep.
And so now he's been moved back to free safety just to see what he can do. And Brian Kelly talked about that decision a couple of days ago. Here is Brian Kelly on the freshman early enrollee, Houston Griffith.
We think that he's a guy that has the combination of playing away from the ball and just having a good sense of when the ball's in the air, and then a good tackler. We do a tackling drill virtually every day, and through the circuit tackling and then our live tackling, he really stood out as a good tackler. And at the safety position, obviously, that's crucial. And then we saw him at corner with really good ball skills and the size. So it just made sense that we wanted to continue to push the competition back there, because we all know, everybody that's talked about our defense, is that we need more production at the safety position. Whether it's Nick Coleman, Jalen Elliott, whether it's Stud or Fatita, whether it's Houston Griffin, Jen Markeith, we've got a lot of guys now that we can put out there and really push for competition. He adds to that list now.
Well, a lot of praise for Houston Griffith. Is there a spot that A, would allow him to get on the field quicker, and B, is there an easier assignment for him at this point?
Well, I think it's a lot like Julian Love. When we talk about who is the best safety on the roster right now, the answer is still Julian Love, and he's a cornerback. Houston Griffith is a guy that could really be a good cornerback at some point. But suddenly you have so many numbers at cornerback, where it looked kind of dire last year because of some recruiting defections. It looks very promising because you have five guys that can really play cornerback, and then you are adding four more in June. And then you would have had Houston Griffith in that mix. So it's not like he's not talented enough that he wouldn't have gotten on the field somewhere. But at safety, he elevates into one of your top four safeties. I think he's one of the top four safeties now. Now, can he be one of the top two? Possibly. But I think he's definitely in your top four at this instant, Darren, at practice number 10 of his freshman spring. He is in the top four right now. And when we're talking about safeties, we're talking about both safety positions. So he would be in the top two free safeties and the top four overall.
Another question about Houston in a moment, but let's allow one of his position coaches, Todd Light, to talk about the early enrollee.
Obviously, he's only been out there for a couple of practices, so he's still working through his learning curve, but he's doing really, really good and showing some improvement, for that position. We think that he can be a guy that can compete for a starting job at free safety. So, we want to make sure, because he's such a good athlete, we want to put all our best athletes on the field, obviously. And, any way we can get him on the field early, and we feel like, moving him to the free safety spot will do that.
So that's Todd Light talking about Houston Griffith. Is there a possibility you could have Houston Griffith and Aloy Gilman on the field at the same time? Is that realistic?
You could. I'm not sure that will happen. You may have those guys more in a rotation. I think Alohi could play either. I think Houston is a more natural free safety. Alohi is working out at the free safety, but I think he's good enough and physical enough to play the strong safety. So that's possible. They're going to put the best guys on the field. Right now, the guy that is surging at strong safety is Jordan Jenmark Heath. But and Alohi got off to a slow start in spring, Brian Kelly mentioned. I'm not sure that we have that soundbite, but basically you know, he was such an incredible scout team player, but he was learning.
We have BK talking about Gilman. If you want to play that,
yeah, let's do that.
All right, then we'll come back and talk about it. So here is Kelly talking about the guy who transferred from Navy last year, Aloy Gilman.
You know, interesting enough, he had a slow start to the spring. He didn't, and when I say a slow start to the spring, I think he just feels so much more comfortable. He wasn't taught the defense last year. He was taught everybody else's defense because he was on scout team. And that kind of put him back a few practices. And now that he knows what he's doing, he can go play fast and play physical. And we're really starting to see that skill set that he showed when he was at Navy.
So you have another ascending player. So there's a lot of positives coming out of that safety position. And the fact that the cornerbacks are also stronger, this is going to, if again, you have to keep coming. You can't level right off. But if you keep coming, it's exciting where this defense is going to go. There are certain things that you kind of look for through the spring and little mental boxes that I check. And they're starting to check those boxes in terms of having a really good defense, having a defense that is going to give the offense a little bit of a safety net and where you can kind of play to that strength of right the defense. And instead of having to go for it on fourth and three, you punt it, knowing that that defense is going to get the ball back for you.
So this is an intriguing competition. Now, as you just talked about and BK mentioned, you know, Gilman got off to a slow start. He's learning the defense. It is kind of interesting that he spent so much time on scout that he wasn't learning more about the Irish defense. I got to admit that surprised me, but I've never coached defensive football, so maybe it's just me being naive, but I would think a guy like that would get a good sense of your defense last year.
Well, when you are purely a scout team guy.
But why would you want to do that?
Why would you want him to be that?
Just a scout guy. Wouldn't you want him learning the defense? I guess I don't understand the thinking. Again, I'm not a defensive coach, so I'm just asking a question out of stupidity, maybe.
Well, when you know somebody has absolutely no chance of playing for you, he did learn some of it in August, and then when he was rejected by the NCAA, then he went to the back burner. And you want to give your offense good looks, and certainly he was doing it to the point he was getting thrown out of practices because he was too physical. But I wonder if there's – I don't know that the structure allows you to do that with somebody like him. You would think that there would be, but
– I mean, I get why he was on scout team, but I just – surprised there isn't more of a balance.
Well
– who knows?
There are sometimes with quarterbacks but Brandon Wimbush, it was a little bit imbalanced. Malik Zaire, it wasn't. Malik Zaire got to learn the offense at a higher speed. Golson didn't. I mean, it just kind of depends on the player and what's needed. And maybe that's something they need to look at some point. But the thing about it is, spring is the time where you can catch up, and he's caught up. So it was an issue for about a week, and now they're in practice number 10 today. We'll have practice 11 on Thursday, practice 12 on Saturday. And I would imagine when we get a good look at them on Saturday that we're going to see a much different Alohi Gilman than we saw in the early practices.
Finally, in terms of a freshman coming to town like Derek Allen, is it fair to put him in the conversation in October, November, that if they're is playing it up to snuff, or if there's an injury, could he find his way onto the football field?
I think so. I mean, the thing that I like about Derek is he's got a very high football IQ. He's a big safety. He's very fast. He seems to have a very complete skill set. I think a lot of it's going to depend on how other guys are playing, how much they want to fast track him this summer. Mm-hmm. But I think you got to take a look at him. You know, when he, you know, there have been different times where evaluators have thought Derek Allen was the better of the two prospects between Houston and Derek. And there are people that think Houston is the better prospect. And Houston was evaluated largely as a safety, as a high school player. And that's where he is now. So I would not rule him out. I think he's a guy that's going to be a really good safety at Notre Dame. Now, is it going to be in 2018? I don't know that. But they're definitely going to take a look at him. And even if he isn't a guy that can get in the two deeps, and I kind of would be surprised if he's not at least on the cusp of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a special teams guy. These are the kind of guys that Brian Polian needs on special teams, that are better athletes, that are elite athletes, even if they're freshmen, to get some more speed to make those schemes work better on coverage units on special teams.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. A reminder, if you want to take a look at what the Irish depth chart could look like, it's the opinion of Eric Hansen. You can go to IndyInsider.com. Along the top portion of the website, you'll see football. Click on that, and a choice is depth chart, and you can take a look at the Eric Hansen version of the depth chart. He's telling Brian Kelly the way it should be. We'll see if Brian listens in the fall when the depth chart comes out. And, of course, we'll have to wait probably until November to get a Michigan depth chart.
You're right. But I would say probably on Saturday we'll update it again because there's a lot of moving parts right now at certain position groups. Safety is one of them. Offensive line is another one of them. Wide receiver is yet another. Right now, as we talked about on yesterday's show, Chase Claypool is suddenly at the top of the X position, which is the outside speed receiver position.
We'll keep the football conversation going in our next segment as we talk a little bit more about the defense. Also, we will get to the Notre Dame basketball news of the day. Contract extension, ACC conference opponent list is out. We'll talk about that coming up. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from WSBT Radio, brought to you, as always, by our good friends at Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. And by Laban Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at LabanInsurance.com. Eric and Darren live from Four Winds Field from 96.1 WSBT. From Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend, Indiana, this is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser, Laban Insurance, and Goshen Health System. He's Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. South Bend Cubs and Bowling Green Hot Rods play tonight at 7:05 on WSBT Radio. Brendan King will have the pregame at 6:45. I'll have the first pitch at 7:05. Cubs win last night by a score of 9-4 over Bowling Green as they got plenty of help. 7 walks, 3 wild pitches, a pass ball, and an error handed out by the Hot Rods, who feature Brendan McKay, the guy I talked about, the two-way player, number 4 pick in the draft, made his Midwest League debut on the mound last night. 2 innings, 6 batters, 2 ground outs, 4 strikeouts. And Eric, he was a lefty. He barely even broke a sweat throwing the ball, and it was 95. You know, some guys, they got to throw their whole body at it. I mean, it was like he was playing catch. It was just ridiculous. And now tonight, he's hitting cleanup for the Hot Rods, the designated hitter. And he's off to a pretty doggone good start with the bat as he enters tonight. 5-for-9. No homers, 5 RBIs, 6 walks, an on-base percentage of .733.
Okay. Pardon my ignorance. Does the Midwest League have a DH?
Yes, in fact, Bowling Green lost their DH last night. I had not seen this happen in 4 years.
Because he batted?
No, the catcher got hurt. No, they had a DH for the pitcher, McKay, last night.
Okay.
The catcher got hurt. The DH was the catcher. And they only had 2 catchers, so they had to bring the DH into the field, so you lose your DH.
Okay.
So they were explaining to a reliever, you could see it going on the dugout. He's like, what, I have to bat? Well, what helmet am I going to use? Give me a bat. I mean, they had nothing. So they had to use a pitcher batting the rest of the game.
Okay.
Because they used the DH as a person in the field. So first time I've seen that happen in a Midwest League game.
Does the Angels pitcher, when he's pitching, does he bat for himself, or do they use
DH? No, they DH for him.
Use pull holds, probably? Okay.
I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah, they've got a figure out a way to get a little rotation going with first baseman and DH out there. And Ohtani is doing amazing things right now. Had a perfect game in the seventh inning last weekend. Wow. And has three home runs and like 13 at bats. So, man, this game is pretty easy coming over from Japan, isn't it?
For some people.
For some people, without a doubt. All right, so Cubs and Hot Rods tonight, 7:05 on WSBT Radio. We'll get back to more football conversation in just a moment, but some news out of the Notre Dame basketball office today, as it was announced that Irish men's basketball coach Mike Bray has agreed to a contract extension that will run through 2024-2025. Now, his current deal, which was signed 6 years ago, was going to expire following the 21-22 season. Now, pretty good run by Coach Bray since the 06-07 campaign. They have won 20 games 11 times, 9 NCAA tournament victories, including 2 trips to the Elite Eight and the ACC Championship. And Coach Bray had this to say today about the contract extension. This was in a press release from Notre Dame. Quote, "My goal has always been to be good enough to retire as the head coach at Notre Dame. It sure looks like I might be able to pull that off with this extension. I am truly honored and humbled to be the head coach at the University of Notre Dame. I want to sincerely thank Notre Dame President John Jenkins and Jack Swarbrick for their steadfast support and commitment to our program," end quote. Well, frustrating year this year. The injuries cost them a trip to the NCAA tournament. Would have been a team that obviously would have competed for at least a spot in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. And at the start of the year, bigger things were expected from the bunch. But when Bonzi goes down, you lose Farrell for a time and on and on and on. It just didn't work out for this team. But ever since Mike and the Irish missed the tournament 3 straight years and went to the NIT, everything has really turned around for this program. And Eric, this is some of the greatest momentum this program has had in its existence. And I even say that knowing this year, because of the injuries, was a disappointment. They didn't make the tournament. But yet there is still great momentum with a good, solid nucleus coming back. I mean, you're not going to replace Colson. That's plain and simple. He's a guy that you're just not going to pick up off the waiver wire and throw out there and be Bonzi Colson. But with the transfer from Connecticut, the freshman class, and an interesting group of players coming back in the starting lineup, it just feels like this was the right time to extend Mike Bray, because it doesn't appear this thing's going to slow down anytime soon, especially with this freshman class he's got coming in.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. I don't know how good of a year they're going to have next year, but they're going to be exciting. They're going to be a team that's probably going to be much better in March than they are in November. It's exciting to see all those options and so forth, and you build around TJ Gibbs and Rex Pfluger, and there's a lot there. I mean, I think that you look and you say there's a lot of exciting things happen with Notre Dame men's basketball. There's a lot of exciting things with a lot of the Notre Dame programs these days in there.
A lot of momentum with a lot of teams,
yeah,
right now. And that's kind of highlighted by the women's basketball team winning the national championship. They've got a great recruiting class coming in. It sounds like they may have the chance to add on to it.
Yeah, there's the number one player in the country is from Virginia, and that decision is going to be announced on Sunday, and Notre Dame is in the mix for her, and I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but I will before the end of the show mention it. But they are in play for that, and they already have Anaya Peoples in this class, a really good guard from Illinois, one of the top point guards in the country. And the recruiting just continues for Muffet McGraw, and the expectations will be high.
Oh, they're through the roof right now.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. One more element to the Notre Dame basketball story today was the fact that the ACC announced the opponent schedule in conference play for Notre Dame. The Irish had probably an A schedule last year, and they had some tough Saturday, Monday, 2 games in 3 days where they were home Saturday and then had to travel, which is a very tough thing for these teams to do, and we're not sure about that part of the schedule yet. But we do know their repeat opponents, And North Carolina is no longer on that list like last year. And I would say probably the repeat opponent list. This is kind of the B schedule, maybe even a B-minus schedule, because you get Virginia Tech. Now, they made the NCAA tournament. Buzz Williams and the Hokies beat the Irish at home this year, so I don't want to discount them too much. But you got Georgia Tech and Boston College, two bottom three or four teams in the ACC, more years than not over the last few years. BC was a little better this year, but I know two of their players entered the NBA draft. I'm not sure if they're going to stick or not or come back. So you got Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Boston College. Now, you do have Virginia, the defending regular season champions and the team that lost to the Retrievers in the NCAA tournament. That's 16-1. But that seems to be a pretty manageable schedule, even though this team's going to be a little different in terms of age and experience of last year. Virginia, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Boston College, home and away for the Fighting Irish this year. The home opponents for Notre Dame. So if you have season tickets, here's what you have in store. Clemson, Duke, North Carolina State, Syracuse, and Wake Forest. So everybody can boo Jim Boeheim all they want. Jim will be coming back to Purcell Pavilion. And on the road, the Fighting Irish will take on Florida State, Miami, Louisville, North Carolina, and Pittsburgh. So again, the teams will play twice, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, and Boston College. So I think that's a little bit more of a manageable schedule for this particular group. So that's some Irish basketball news. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you on WSBT Radio.
And the young lady's name is Samantha Brunel, and she's a 6'2 forward from Rutgersville, Virginia.
Okay. And how tall is she?
6'2", 6'2 forward.
All right, very good. We'll watch to see if she picks the University of Notre Dame. They've already got a great class coming in. And you got all these players coming off the shelf. I mean, I know Muffet on the show with you and Sean, I believe it was talking about she's going to have all these options. She's probably going to have to manage some egos probably too, because there's going to be 10 or 11 people that could start for everybody in the country.
Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden you add front court depth and you add guard depth and you're like, okay, where does everybody fit now?
I'll tell you, to play six players and to win the tournament. And they didn't have any cupcakes. They didn't have any big upsets like Michigan on the men's side to get to the tournament.
Right.
They had to go through the 2-seed Oregon with the 4-seed A&M. They were down double digits to them. And then you got to go through UConn and Mississippi State, two number one seeds. So it wasn't like they got a free pass. They really had to earn that championship. There were no gimmies along the way.
And they had kind of tested themselves earlier. They had a stretch where they had 12 straight games away from home. And according to the RPI, they played the toughest schedule in the country. That's before the tournament.
She always plays a tough schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, she does not back away. And I love the fact she'll take her seniors near their hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And if the team nearby agrees to play, I just think that's really cool to do.
I do, too.
It's probably tougher to do in men's basketball, to be honest, but I love that fact. If I'm choosing between schools, and there's a million things to like about Notre Dame, tell you what, near the bottom of my list, knowing that Muffet will take me back home, that would be very intriguing to me.
The funny thing is the way that women's basketball coaches schedule, because they are absolutely fearless. And again, maybe I'm not sure why it pays off for them, but it does. It's like the committee rewards. Even teams with a bunch of losses that played a tough schedule, they were rewarded. For example, Notre Dame had three losses. I think Baylor had one, and they were number two in the AP poll. But Notre Dame got the number one seed over Baylor because their schedule was so much tougher than Baylor. So it's pretty interesting. But you get into the tournament, and well, Connecticut and Notre Dame have played, you know, Connecticut and Louisville had played.
Yeah.
You know, all these teams had played each other, not necessarily the same conference.
Incredible. Eric and Darren with you, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. A little more football conversation. Want to wrap up some defensive conversation. Brian Kelly recently talking about where the defense is through this point of camp.
Still need to emerge at the safety position. We moved Houston Griffin back to the safety position. Going to give him a look back there. We like his contact skills, his tackling, his ability to play the ball in the air.
you know, we're pleased with both inside linebackers and Jonathan, you know, Jones. He's got to be a guy that consistently shows up for us, because he's got to be able to step in there in a more active role. So I know there's a lot there that I just said in a short period of time, but all in all, I think halfway through, we've learned a lot more about our football team, and we'll continue to do that in the back half.
So, pretty good feel, Eric, for this defense. You've seen them in practice a couple of times. Do you feel like they have built on the success they started last year?
I think so. I think, you know, losing Jay Hayes was not ideal, because you really had some great depth at defensive end. You're kind of one injury away from being thin at that strong side defensive end. But, you know, the young guys, I think what you were looking to see were kind of three things. What did the interior defensive line depth look like? What did the linebacker depth look like, including at Rover? And how's the safety position coming? And I think you've checked at least the safety box. I mean, that's coming along pretty good. The starters at linebacker are outstanding. Still think that they're trying to define who the Rover is. And also, who's your better back? You know, is Jonathan Jones going to be your third linebacker? Is one of those freshmen going to get involved? And I think the defensive line depth is coming along. I think Jason Adamalola, a true freshman, is going to be able to work his way into that mix in the fall. And he's one of the kids out of St. Peter's Prep in New Jersey.
And here's Brian Kelly talking about the Rover competition.
Right now, we feel great about Asmar if you're lining up a tight end and he can stand over the top of a tight end. If you want to get in a detached game and four wides, we can nickel out as an option. Or we can look at another Rover that maybe has a little bit more of an ability to cover that number two receiver down the field. So we have some other options there. So I don't think it needs to come to, all right, this has to happen in the spring. I think the nickel position will help us decide the Rover position. We know what we've got with Asmar, with a tight end there, and I think we just keep working some young guys.
Eric, with the construction of defenses today, nickel is pretty much a base defense against a lot of spread teams.
Right, most of the teams.
Right.
Not Stanford, but other teams.
Correct, yeah. Stanford will play that old, good old-fashioned power football. But when you think about against spread teams, somebody's got to come off the field from the main unit. You got Tranquil and Coney at the linebacker spots. Coney came off the field last year at times. I'm just guessing you probably want to keep him on the field this year, and with the versatility of Tranquil, it's hard to imagine he's going to go off the field. So is the Rover going to be a position that may not be on the field as much as last year?
Well, one of the thoughts about Coney coming back, both from a coaching standpoint, Clark Lee, and from Coney himself, was to turn him into an every-down linebacker. And Clark Lee said, that's my job, to get him there. And he has that in him to be that good cover guy. He has those skills. Plus, he's such a good blitzer and such a good guy at being able to get those fourth and one, third and one stops. So you really would love to keep him on. And the beauty about Drew Tranquil playing the Buck linebacker is he can do everything that the Rover could do. So if you take the Rover off, Drew Tranquil can become the Rover. He can slip back into that skill set. I just think, again, right now you're patching together. If you had a definitive Rover and you felt like they could play to the level that Drew Tranquil did last year, then you'd have a harder question to answer. But as it is, Shane Simon is still in the mix there, and that's a guy that doesn't get here till June. And that may ultimately be the answer. It could be Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. Mm-hmm. It could be a combination of people. I don't think, just from listening to Brian Kelly, that they're comfortable with Asmar Bilal being that every down Rover. I don't think he believes Asmar can cover a slot receiver.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I think they're in pretty good shape, because again, Drew Tranquil can slide right back into his old role and be a coverage guy, be a guy that rushes, and you don't know what he's going to do, because he's very good at all those things right now.
Okay, Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, Sportsbeat Live from Four Winds Field. We'll get to another football segment next within the My 5 Question of the Day, not including guys that kick the ball.
Right.
The five Notre Dame players that will make the biggest impact on special teams this fall. Eric has his list, and he will reveal it next on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser, Goshen Health System, and Laven Insurance from 96.1 WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett from Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend. Not counting kickers or punters. Are we counting long snappers and holders? They're off the list, too?
They're off the list, too, although I wouldn't have them on the list anyway.
Okay.
Not unless they're throwing touchdown passes. DeShone Kizer was a heck of a holder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I think, was Alize Mack's first touchdown? Oh, no, it was Durham Smythe.
Durham Smythe, Smythe at Virginia.
That's right.
Yeah.
The five Notre Dame players, besides all those we listed, who will make the biggest impact on the Irish special teams this fall. Brian Polian trying to rework that unit. They're going to be tweaking a lot of things, trying to make it more impactful. So the five players you think will help him reach his goal. We'll start with number five.
Yeah, and there's some guys coming in June that will may rearrange this list, and one of the guys coming in June made the list, and that's Braden Lindsey, the wide receiver from Oregon. He's a young man who's going to run track and play football at Notre Dame. He's one of the top sprinters out west. He's got the kind of speed where, you know, I don't know that he's going to get on the field as a wide receiver as a freshman, but I think he's going to get a long look as a return guy as a freshman.
All right, so Braden Lindsey, number five. Number four.
I'm going to go with another return guy there, and it's Michael Young. We saw Michael a little bit last year on kickoff returns. He has the kind of stuff to be a punt returner, although Chris Fink is kind of holding that right now. But he may get a look there. He'll definitely get a look at kickoff return. So Michael Young, number four.
The five Notre Dame players who will make the biggest impact on special teams this fall, not counting people who kick the ball or hold the ball or snap the ball. Number three.
Well, I'm going to go with Houston Griffith, who tackles the ball. Because I was watching him in some of the practices, Darren, and I remember in back-to-back drills, Todd Light saying, that's a perfect tackle. And you watch him in, you know, playing safety, and I've watched him play corner. And the one thing he does is he's like a heat-seeking missile and finds the ball. And is just so strong in his tackling form that that's what you need at special teams. You need somebody that's not going to miss a tackle.
Number two.
Number two, I'm going with another guy, and this guy was really good on special teams last year, and it was Jordan Genmark Heath. He is a tremendous guy on coverage units, has the speed and size that you need, and again, another sure tackler and ascending player.
And we're up to the guy more than anybody else that will help special teams in the fall. Who's your guy?
I think this guy has a chance to be a star on special teams, and it's Alohi Gilman. He will absolutely flat out hit you, and he is so gung-ho about special teams and so smart about special teams that I think he's going to be a favorite in terms of fans kind of watching him tackling people and going, woo.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
The My 5 Question of the Day. Eric and Darren with you from Four Winds Field on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Got a lot of basketball on our paper coming tomorrow. The women's national championship basketball team has their banquet. We'll find out who their MVP and all their award winners will be.
That's a tough call.
Yeah, that is a tough call.
Well, Arike.
Well, but, you know, everybody else is pretty valuable. You almost have to give, I don't know.
She hit the two shots. Kobe's hanging out with her. You got to give her the MVP.
Give it to Kobe.
Okay.
Her dog's named Kobe. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Okay. And then Mike Bray's extension, we'll have all the news on that. Bonzi Colson re-broke his the same foot that he had earlier, same kind of timetable for recovery. Mm-hmm. Tom Noy has a column on that. Mm. And of course, Darren, there's always what? Much, much more.
My favorite part. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Sean joins me in a couple of moments. It is the top of the hour at WSBT South.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
6 o'clock hour of Sports Beat has arrived on 96.1. WSBT, Sean back in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren with the South Bend Cubs at Four Winds Field. Cubs and Bowling Green Hot Rods play game two of their four-game series. In 1 hour, Brendan King will have the pregame for you at 6:45, and I'll have the first pitch at 7:05 here on WSBT Radio. It is still sweatshirt slash jacket weather here at the ballpark. Sounds like it's going to warm up over the next couple of days, so that's good news. But the wind is blowing out to right field today, and we're going to have baseball in just a little bit. We're going to talk some Irish basketball, some Major League Baseball. We've got rapid fire all to get to before we wrap things up in about 40 minutes here on WSBT Radio. Mr. Stiers, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. I didn't see you at the office today. I was out before you got in, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we were in and out at different times, so.
That's going to be the rest of the summer, I have a feeling.
Exactly.
You'll be saying hi, and I'll be saying bye probably more times than not. Well, last night, South Bend beat Bowling Green 9-4. Bowling Green was very gracious as they handed out in the ball game 7 walks, 3 wild pitches, a pass ball, and an error. Notre Dame. I keep in hockey mode. I cannot get Irish and Notre Dame out of my head after saying it the last 2 weeks.
Say, you've been there a while now. Not even 2 weeks. Since October, you've been saying Notre Dame. So
South Bend scored 5 times in the fourth inning on 1 hit. You need a little help along the way. It was double, walk, walk, hit by pitch, bases loaded walk, RBI single, and then a play in which 2 outs were recorded, another couple of runs scored. There was a wild pitch in there, so kind of a crazy ball game last night. I would call it an April cold Midwest League game with just a lot of wild pitches, pass balls. We had 4 errors in the ball game, and it's not easy throwing the baseball in cold weather. In fact, the guy for Bowling Green who tied a franchise record for 7 walks last night was from Venezuela, and this is his first time in the Midwest League. Probably the coldest game he's ever pitched in.
Wow.
Because he was short season baseball last year, so it's not going to get that cold up in the Northeast in July or August. So I'm sure it was the coldest game he has ever pitched in, and he had a tough time finding the strikes and walking 7 guys last night. But I'll say this, I teased Brennan McKay last night, the two-way player out of the University of Louisville who faced Notre Dame the last couple of years. He made his Midwest League pitching debut last night, limited pitch count, but I would say 2 innings, 2 ground ball outs, 4 strikeouts, no walks is a pretty good start. Gave up no base hits, no walks, just 6 up, 6 down. And let me tell you, he's a left-hander, and it looked like he was playing catch. It was effortless, and he threw 95 and had a really, really good breaking ball. And many believe he can be an ace at the major league level. So if you're Tampa Bay, you've got a guy that hits pretty well. He's 5-for-9 with 6 walks so far in the Midwest League and 5 RBI. He could be a really good hitter for you, but do you want to risk him not being an ace for 2 reasons? A, injury, or B, trying to be really, really good at 2 things at the highest level. I actually think they've got a pretty tough decision coming up for Brendan McKay. Maybe they don't have to do it right away, but if he gets to the majors and he's an ace-type pitcher, do you want him messing around hitting? I think it's an interesting question.
That is a good question. We kind of talked about it last night, and the fact that if you have someone like Shohei Ohtani, for example, who's able to excel at that level, then you're going to save a roster spot because you've got a guy who can pitch really well. You've got a guy who can hit really well. Yeah, you don't not necessarily save a roster spot, but that roster spot accounts for more than just one roster spot, obviously. Well, so it is going to be an interesting question to see if a guy like McKay, a U.S. born and grown guy, can do something like that at that level.
Let me ask the question from a different angle. If you're the agent of Brendan McKay, and if he becomes an ace, is there more value in him just being an ace pitcher where he can excel to the highest level? Because I just can't imagine you can be as good as you could possibly be by doing both. If that's a fair statement, then I ask the question, if you're the agent, do you want him just to be a pitcher, or is there more value in him being a two-way player? Either way, it's good. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. And I mean, I know these guys, a starting pitcher, they throw their bullpen, their side sessions and stuff like that in between starts, and there's different stuff they do. But, I mean, so I guess it's hard for me to see where, like, it would really take that much away from his pitching if he's also a DH or whatever, a first baseman three times a week. So I don't know. And I guess it's hard to really envision just because we haven't seen it before. And I think part of it is these teams invest so much in these guys that they would rather go all in on one or the other than trying to have them do a little bit of both.
Well, as the fourth overall pick, he's got a couple of $1 million in his back pocket already, so there's no pressure.
None at all.
I mean, you're pretty good for life no matter what happens from here. Well, Brendan McKay back in the Bowling Green lineup tonight. He's the cleanup hitter and will be the designated hitter for the Rays affiliate in the Midwest League, the Bowling Green Hot Rods. So looking forward to seeing McKay hit tonight after impressing everybody with his two scoreless innings last night.
Question for you. I didn't look at the box score. Maybe I should have. But so are you saying that he just pitched last night? He did not hit for himself or any of that kind
Correct.
Of thing? Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
They had a DH, and actually they lost their DH in like the fifth inning because the catcher got hurt and the backup catcher was the DH. So the DH had to catch, so that means they lost the DH. The pitchers had to hit, and the kid I was talking about that walked seven from Venezuela, you could see him in the dugout explaining to him, you got to hit now. And I think he was like, what?
Okay.
Okay, so give me a helmet, give me a bat, give me some batting gloves, and I'll go, but otherwise I got nothing.
That's right.
So the conversation lasts a little while because I think they were trying to get through to him. No, you really do have to hit. We're not kidding. You really do have to stand in there. And, of course, all the relievers that had to hit just stood there and watched and enjoyed a few pitches that went across the plate. Now, from a South Bend Cub perspective tonight, 2017 first-round pick, Brendan Little will make his Midwest League debut for the South Bend Cubs. He is a left-hander, really intriguing prospect in the Chicago Cubs system. He got a $2.2 million signing bonus as a first-round pick of the Cubs last year. He pitched at North Carolina for a year, did not get much action, eventually ended up at the State College of Florida, where he pitched 15 games last spring, 133 strikeouts in 85 innings of work. And so Brendan Little, a left-hander, will make his Midwest League debut. And according to Baseball America, he is the seventh best prospect in the Cubs system. MLB Pipeline has him as number six. And the guy that pitches tomorrow is number three and number four, respectively, on those lists, 19-year-old right-hander Jose Alberto. So we've had great starting pitching already, and well, the two guys, the people that do this for a living, think that are the best prospects, have not pitched as of yet. They're going to pitch tonight and tomorrow for the South Bend Cubs. So Brendan Little will get the call tonight, the first-round pick of the Chicago Cubs last summer. Now, Major League Baseball this afternoon, it was the home opener a day late for the Chicago Cubs, and there was no joy in Wrigleyville today. Well, there probably was plenty of joy outside the ballpark, but in the friendly confines, the Buccos beat the Cubs 8-5. Pittsburgh off to a roaring start. They're now 8-2 as Corey Dickerson and Francisco Cervelli each picked up three base hits. Cervelli drove in three, and it was a so-so outing for Tyler Chatwood. He had some moments, but end of the day, five innings, nine hits, five earned runs, a walk, and seven strikeouts. Montgomery came in, pitched two innings, and gave up three runs. So the Cubs fall, despite the fact that Javier Baez belted two home runs for the Chicago Cubs. And this was their first day without first baseman Anthony Rizzo, who was placed on the disabled list this morning with a back issue. Doesn't seem like it's going to be a long term, probably after 10 days, retroactive to, I think they said Friday or possibly Saturday, he'll be back in the Chicago Cubs lineup. But today, the Buccos showed that they're not going anywhere, at least right now, after sending away some of their key players, Garrett Cole to Houston and Andrew McCutchen to San Francisco. Here they are at 8-2, leading the Central as they beat the Cubs today by a score of 8-5. And former South Bend Cub Ian Happ, the first-round pick out of Cincinnati. Remember when he homered on opening day on the first pitch? He has not homered since. And his batting average now is at 156. So batting average, of course, isn't everything in today's game. It's all about the on-base percentage. But right now, he's just scuffling right now. His OPS is only 519. And ever since that home run, he's had his issues. And I'm trying to look up real fast how many strikeouts he's now up to. And it is 18 strikeouts in 32 at-bats. And I don't know if that counts today or not. And let me see here. It does not, I don't believe. So his on-base percentage is .229 right now. So Happ right now is just having his issues. He's kind of a hit-or-miss guy. He's going to strike out a lot. He's going to homer a lot. But you'd like to see the on-base percentage a whole lot better. And he's capable of that. He'll eventually draw some walks. But with Happ struggling, Schwarber's hitting .212, had a couple of hits today. Javier Baez hitting .194. He homered twice. There's some holes in that Cub lineup, and I haven't even mentioned Jason Hayward, who's hitting .226. Now, he picked up a two RBI single in the eighth inning. He's hitting .226. Addison Russell, .242. So there's no panic in Chicago, but there's some holes right now in that lineup, and it looks a whole lot different without Mr. Rizzo near the top of that lineup.
Yeah, there's a lot of holes in that lineup right now. I mean, really, Bryant and Zobrist are the only two guys who are have really been very consistently good, because guys like Happ have been consistently not good so far. And I mean, that leadoff spot continues to be an issue. And coming out of spring training, it really didn't seem like it would be. There weren't a lot of indications that he was going to really struggle like this to get on base and put the ball in play consistently, but he has. And so there are just a lot of different things. And again, it is still early, as you alluded to, because you look at Pittsburgh, and I'm not going to write them off, even though they did, as you said, they traded Garrett Cole and McCutchen is gone. But at the same time, Cincinnati, if I remember right, started off pretty hot last year, too. Mm-hmm. And things didn't work out for them. So it is still early on both sides, for the teams that are doing well and the teams that aren't doing so well. And always wait until it warms up consistently temperature-wise before we start to make any real judgments, I think.
19 strikeouts now and 36 at-bats for Ian Happ, it looks like, with the updated numbers. So obviously that's not
today,
a good ratio.
But he still didn't get any hits, so
0-4 with a walk and a strikeout. If the walks start coming more into play, you can live more with the strikeouts. In today's world, I don't like it, but in today's baseball, as long as you get on base, they don't care if you strike out. But he's got to make a little more contact right now. It's tough to have a guy in the leadoff spot that strikes out that much, but they've tried Schwarber in the past. Zobrist, you know, he's hitting .300 right now, but an 0-5 today. I just don't like really him in that top spot. So if it's not going to work out with Happ, I wonder who the next choice will be. Kind of a tough call for Joe Maddon. But right now they're going to stick with Happ, I'm sure, for a couple of more weeks. I mean, they stuck with Schwarber a long time, it seemed like, in the leadoff spot last year, even though every Cub fan, I think, was saying, Joe, when are you going to move him down and take a little pressure off of him? He stuck with him a long time. On the south side of Chicago, Tampa Bay beat the White Sox today 6-5. The White Sox still have not won a home game so far this year. Tampa Bay has now won just three games all year as they beat the White Sox once again today. So the Rays over the White Sox by a score of 6-5. Let's move along to some basketball news real quick. Mike Bray signs a contract extension through the 24-25 season. University Vice President and Athletics Director Jack Swarbrick had this to say in a press release, quote, Mike Bray has built one of the most consistently successful programs in the country, and the foundation of that success is a winning culture that develops the members of his teams as both basketball players and young men. He is a perfect fit for Notre Dame, and we are excited to have him lead our program well into the future, end quote. Mike Bray had this to say in that same press release, quote, My goal has always been to be good enough to retire as the head coach at Notre Dame. It sure looks like I might be able to pull that off with this extension. I am truly honored and humbled to be the head coach at the University of Notre Dame. I want to sincerely thank Notre Dame President John Jenkins and Jack Swarbrick for their steadfast support and commitment to our program, end quote. Well, this seemed necessary. You know, his contract was going to run a couple of more years, but with the momentum of the program and with the youth in this group and with the way recruiting has been going, it really did seem like the perfect time to take care of Mike Bray, and maybe this will be his last contract at the University of Notre Dame.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's a great move that the program's all-time winningest coach and the job he and his staff did this year, keeping the team in contention for an NCAA bid with everything that they went through. I thought it was really amazing, and they ended up being the first team out of the NCAA tournament despite everything they went through. And they've still made it to the big dance 12 of the 18 years that he's been head coach. Yeah. And, I mean, when you think about that, again, the statement that Jack Swarbrick made about the consistency of the program, and, I mean, I think it's a really good number, and I think it's still underappreciated in some circles. And I went and kind of dug through. I looked at the rest of the ACC. Bray has 12 NCAA bids at Notre Dame. If you look at the rest of the ACC, the other nine teams in the conference, not named Duke, North Carolina, Syracuse, or Louisville, the I think you'd call traditional basketball schools, known as basketball schools historically, the other teams averaged 7 NCAA bids over the same period as Mike Bray. So the rest of the conference is averaging 7 NCAA bids. Bray has 12, and that includes Virginia, who has 8 bids in that same amount of time. So, I mean, it's just a great track record that he's put up, and a great decision to run that contract for another 7 seasons.
ACC opponents unveiled today by the conference. The teams, the Irish, will play home and away. The traditional rivalries, I'm not sure how Georgia Tech got on the list, but it is Boston College and Georgia Tech again. And they're joined by Virginia and Virginia Tech. For the home schedule, Clemson, Duke, NC State, Syracuse, Wake Forest. Road schedule, Florida State, Louisville, Miami, North Carolina, Pittsburgh. Would you call that a B schedule? That's the first thing I thought of when I looked at it.
Yeah, probably so.
Now, it's manageable for this team. There's a lot of veteran players back, but there's some youth and inexperience, and some guys are going to play some bigger roles this year. So I think this was actually a good time for the ACC to tweak things a little bit. There was no need to have, you know, North Carolina in there. I mean, Virginia is no pushover. We know how difficult they are to play, and they've been so good, so consistent the last few years, despite what happened in the NCAA tournament. But BC and Georgia Tech, I mean, BC had 2 players go pro. I'm not sure if they're going to sign with an agent or come back. Georgia Tech hasn't been any good. Virginia Tech's been, they were good last year. Tournament team, beat the Irish, and of course Virginia. But that just feels like, considering the makeup of this team, it might take them a little time to gel. We'll see. I think that's a very manageable schedule for Mike Bray's team next year.
Yeah, I think so, especially when you consider the youth that they're going to have. But with all these freshmen coming in who are going to see significant minutes next year, at least a few of them are anyway, I think it's a schedule that really gives them a chance to be pretty competitive early on and a chance to get better as the season goes on, depending on how it all shakes out when the schedule does come out.
We've got some rapid fire for you. We'll do that coming up next. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser, also by Laban Insurance and Goshen Health System from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Abby, thank you. Sean and Darren back with you on Sports Beat. Hey, I want to throw this in real quick before rapid fire. The United States Attorney's Office, Southern District of New York, was added again today into that college basketball investigation. And the latest indictments say that, let's see, the superseding indictment expands the scope of the charge wire fraud conspiracy to include alleged payments to the families of six student athletes in connection with those players' decisions to attend four different NCAA Division I universities. The four universities, three of them we've heard before, the University of Louisville, the University of Miami, and North Carolina State University. The new team added to the list, the University of Kansas. And all four were sponsored by the same major athletic apparel company, which we believe to be Adidas.
Yay!
William Jefferson's self will be now front and center, probably, in a whole bunch of questioning there in Lawrence. And this is not going to go away anytime soon. I feel like this is only getting started.
Yeah, I think it had something to do with Josh Jackson last year, who's, of course, down in Phoenix right now. I haven't seen a whole lot of details. I just saw something on Twitter right before you said that, too. So I'm going to have to go do my research.
Alleged payment of $90,000 to the family of a student athlete at Kansas is what is being alleged.
Yeah.
But they couldn't round it off to 100,000.
Yeah,
I
know, right?
If you're going to go 90, why not go 100? Sounds a whole lot better.
Good times.
Okay, rapid fire, take it away.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. On college basketball subject, do you buy or sell the Notre Dame men's team naming its five-man senior class of Bonzi Colson, Matt Farrell, Austin Torres, Martin Gebben, and Matt Gregory team MVP, all five of those guys, at last night's banquet?
It's odd, not something you see a lot. I understand why they did it, the winningest group in program history.
Right.
It's tough probably to give it to Bonzi because he was hurt most of the year, but I think we all agree he's still the best player on the team, and they are team number 69 if it's not for the efforts of Bonzi Colson. So I don't want to be insensitive, so I'm just going to leave it there and say, well, I mean, I don't want to say some people on that list aren't deserving to be an MVP because there are different ways of deciding who an MVP
kind of
is.
It down, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. They gave it to all of them. I understand why, but I just look at the MVP as the most valuable player, not players, and I would just pick one if I had my say in the matter, but nobody gives a darn about what I have to say. So I'm sure those guys in that senior class all appreciated the gesture by Mike Bray.
Yeah, and I give it a slight buy, I guess, because I get what you're saying there, and it's kind of a hint of a lifetime achievement award.
Yeah.
Because, as you said, the winningest senior class in program history, I think that's there. And 103 wins, an ACC championship, a couple Elite Eights, and of course, an ACC championship, and I think that maybe sort of after the sting of this year, they are still the winningest class in program history, and so kind of a nod, a big nod, I think, to that. And but they also set a standard and kind of helped keep things together. And even with all the stuff that this team went through, the fact that they were still in the running for an NCAA bid at the end of the season,
right,
and kind of, you know, holding things together and all that, I think maybe that plays into it as well. So I understand, but I agree. It's obviously not an MVP. So,
and in the whole scheme of things, you know, probably doesn't matter a whole lot. And let me just throw out that Notre Dame baseball just beat Michigan State 8-7. Cole Kmet took care of business in the ninth inning for a sixth save.
All right. You'll have to let Brendan Hughes know about that, right?
Oh, that's right. The Michigan State Spartan. You got it. We'll pass that along.
That's right. Okay. Now, this next one is more basketball as well, and I'm interested to get your take on this. Of course, the Irish women hold their banquet tonight, mm-hmm. but not necessarily related to that. We've talked here about the disparity between the top women's teams and everyone else in the women's game, and Eric Hansen and I interviewed Muffet McGraw recently, and I asked her specifically about UConn's dominance and if she thought that maybe UConn might be kind of with all these other teams, Notre Dame included, coming up to the forefront in women's basketball. We have seen some different faces kind of emerge. And I asked her if she thought that maybe UConn was kind of a carrot dangling out there for the rest of women's basketball to try to catch and maybe kind of has indirectly helped some of these other teams. And I thought her answer was interesting. I'm going to play it for you right now. I'll let you hear it and then see what you think of the answer.
You know, Sean, I think it all comes down to recruiting. I think if you look at this year's senior class, Asia Wilson was one of the best players coming out. Breonna Turner, Kelsey Mitchell. They all went someplace different. The sophomore class, same thing. You've got Sabrina Ionescu from Oregon, who made the All-American team as a sophomore. Lauren Cox, Kalani Brown, Player of the Year in the Big 12 as a sophomore. So I think kids were choosing to go different places, and I think that's the biggest thing. When you get the number one player in the country every year in women's basketball, that's going to make a difference. Because in women's basketball, we don't have the kind of depth in the top 20. Even if you get All-Americans, they're not program-changing players necessarily. You've got to get the top three kids in the country. You know, like we got Jewel Lloyd and Skylar. They change your program. You get other kids that are really good players, and I think that there is definitely parity. You know, from outside of the top, maybe the top four down, there's great parity. But to get to that elite level, you've got to get the All-Americans.
So there's her response. Darren, what do you think about that?
Well, that's interesting because I honestly don't follow recruiting, so I really had no idea who goes where.
Right.
So that was more informative for me than anything else. So you're wanting the question to be answered in what way?
Well, I guess I just thought, especially probably the last half there where she talked about the separation between number one and number 20, because I think if you look at it, like the way she says it like that, the difference between 1 and 20 on the men's side is probably kind of like driving from South Bend to Granger, whereas on the women's side, it's like driving from South Bend to New York. There's quite a big gap. And so when you're talking about UConn, I mean, they're landing someone in the top five, if not number one, pretty much year in and year out. And you could see how that creates a big disparity that we always talk about in the women's game.
Sure. Well, I think we as fans or media have noticed, I mean, there have been a couple of McDonald's All-Americans that Notre Dame has got. And when you hear that, you do think of the men's side, wow, this is going to be a program changer. And there have been some that have very little impact at all on this program. So it even shows if you get a McDonald's All-American, that doesn't mean you're going to get a great player. And that's something I've learned through the years.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, there have been, as she said, it's not good enough just to get the All-Americans. You have to get the top ones, and they have had, prior to Skylar Diggins, I mean, there were plenty of McDonald's All-Americans who were coming in, but they weren't those top four, type five. And when you look at what they were able to do this year despite all those injuries, well, I went back, and I'm like you, I don't really follow it that closely. I'm like, well, I wonder what Arike Ogunbowale's ranking was. Well, she was a top four player. Top four, top five coming out of high school. So you can see where still having a player like that is going to go a long way despite the depth and all that other stuff that they battled with this year.
Well, I've got a good rapid fire question for you down the line. Ooh. I just thought of it.
All right.
Talk to me.
I'll save that one.
All right. How much time do you think we've got left here? Are we going to need to get out here pretty soon?
We got a minute.
Okay.
We've got a minute if you got a short one.
Let me see. Well, I'll ask you this one, because I think this will be a little bit shorter. Fill in the blank on this one. For the first time ever, NHL playoff games are going to be televised on the Golf Channel, and that is blank.
Really? I hadn't heard that. Well, they're an NBC. No, they're an NBC group.
Right.
And with NBC Sports Network and NBC having the rights for all of that, they put all the games on like CNBC and MSNBC and USA. So I guess that's another outlet that's really, really intriguing. So I'm excited about that. I think that's great. You know me, any chance to get another hockey game in front of someone, especially the Stanley Cup playoffs, which is so much better than the regular season.
Right.
I get why people don't like the regular season. I will not argue, but the playoffs in the NHL as good as any in sports.
Yeah, and I mean, it does sound odd saying hockey playoffs on the Golf Channel. I get
it. Love it. Well, it's the same swing.
Yeah, there you go. That's what's, I think, striking people. And I mean, when you think about it, who would have thought that the NCAA tournament would ever be on True TV, you know?
Yeah.
So,
hey, remember, Happy Gilmore punched Bob Barker on the golf course, so you might have a little of that in hockey, golf, so it's just a perfect match.
There
I love
go.
It. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's going to be a different location for hockey for sure, but it's still going to be on TV, and that's all that matters. And like you said, a different audience maybe gets to sample it a little bit too. So,
good deal. Like it.
Yep.
Very good.
All right.
All right. That's Rapid Fire, and that is Sports Beat for this Tuesday. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartandVascular.org. And by Laven Insurance, the agency that rocks. CY at LavenInsurance.com. Sean, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good call tonight.
You have a great evening. We appreciate it. It is 18 minutes in front of the top of the hour. I was going to say you have a great call, too, but maybe you're going to call a game at home. I don't know. So we've got Okay, very good. South Bend Cubs baseball coming up in just a couple of moments on the Sports Leader 96.1 WSBT.